Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
To Wesley Fields. Touchdown, Georgia Southern.
Pass swings on the way. It's gone!
Welcome to Georgia Southern Extra. I'm your host, Nathan Dominitz, sports content editor of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. And we talk about Georgia Southern athletics, specifically football. It's football season as we record this on Wednesday, going into the game October 8th at Georgia State. It's 2 p.m. kickoff in Atlanta, Georgia Southern at Georgia State. And we'll be talking with Stan Autry of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Just a quick recap, the Georgia Southern is 3-2 now, an 0-1 in the Sun Belt Conference, opening the conference play last Saturday on the road. Game was moved to a night game because of the expected impact of Hurricane Ian, and they played. It rained in the fourth quarter, and it also rained touchdowns in the fourth quarter for the Chanticleers. I got to remember how to say that right. The Chants. There's a French history there with the chicken. But anyway, the Coastal Carolina was expected to win. They were down 10 points with 12 minutes to go, 24 to 14. And behind Grayson McCall, the two-time player of the year in the Sun Belt Conference, who had never played against Georgia Southern. He'd been injured the previous two meetings, the last 2 years. They play every year. And this year he had a sprained ankle in a Thursday night game against Georgia State, which Stan Autry can tell us more about. But he came back fine. I didn't see any remnants of an injured ankle, and his arm and his head and his legs helped CCU win that game, one that Georgia Southern would definitely want to have back. I wrote they might be regretting a missed opportunity there, but they need to move on to Georgia State. And the Panthers are 1-4, but the one was last Saturday at a really tough out at West Point. So let's bring in Stan Autry of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution to talk about Georgia Southern and Georgia State. Like I said, this week, this Saturday on ESPN3, 2 p.m. kickoff in Atlanta, the second game in the conference for both. Both are 0-1, with both having losses to Coastal Carolina, so they have that in common. And we'll talk about the rivalry, if it's a rivalry and all that. But anyway, Stan, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back. I think this is at least the third time you've been on Georgia Southern Extra.
Always a lot of fun to talk to you, Nathan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Well, it's great to have you. And you're coming in at a good time to talk about Georgia State, because they have, as Coach Sean Elliott said, the Monday is always good for him, but he was particularly upbeat on this Monday because he had good things to talk about. Why does Georgia State have good things to talk about?
Well, coming off a win, they needed to win really badly. And to go to Army, which is a place it's very hard to win. I think that's only the seventh time Army's lost a home game over the last 7 years. Wow. So it's a really tough place to play. And the fact that they needed to win really in the worst possible way, and they got it for this week's game, was really big. He had a lot to smile about.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said he's always upbeat, which is admirable. He's also kind of emotional, fiery coach, I would say, based on the Associated Press still photos of him. He's usually in one of those coaches' faces, which is good to his credit. Maybe not to the officials' benefit, but what was here's what's really interesting. There are a lot of teams that are 0-4, and there's a bunch usually, and there's a bunch that are 0-4 and they play like it. And the word was that Georgia State is the best 0-4 team in the country going into that game against West Point, which may be a matter of opinion. But what's really interesting to me is they were 1-4 a year ago at this time, and they're 1-4 now. And last year they ended up 8-5 and won a bowl game, the Camellia Bowl, tax that Camellia Bowl over Ball State, which Georgia Southern knows very well much about. I don't know if you want to make it a habit, but 1-4 starts are nothing that Georgia State seems to have any fear about.
Well, that's a good point. And I think if they had their druthers, they would druther not be 1-4 again.
Sure, sure.
But I think whoever said that they were the best 0-4 team in the country may have something there, because they played really well against South Carolina, you know, sure, at a very hostile SEC school, and were leading in the third quarter. Had there not been for two blocked punts that went for touchdowns, they would have could have possibly won that game. That turned out to be the deciding factor. They should have beaten North Carolina the second week, had them on the ropes and couldn't close it. Admittedly, did not play well. They made a lot of mistakes against Charlotte in a game they should have won.
That was, what, 42-41 game, so there's a lot of what-ifs on that one.
Yeah, he missed an extra point, and that just kind of put him behind the sticks the rest of the day. And then they got real beat up in that Charlotte game and were missing several offensive linemen. Their defensive captain's out for the year. So they did not play as well against Coastal. And Coastal, as you saw last week, if you're not on the top of your game, they're very hard to put down.
Yeah.
So the state was in very bad need of a win, and it was good for them to go up there and get a big win that they needed at West Point.
Yeah. I think 0-5 feels a lot different from 1-4. And Georgia Southern, I was just thinking about this today, driving over to record this. We were recording this on Wednesday of game week, by the way. 1-0 in the conference compared to 0-1. I don't think it puts you out of anything. And we'll talk more about the division in a later segment. But to be 1-0 over Coastal Carolina, one of the favorites, and to be 4-1 instead of 3-2, I know that's a lot of ifs, but that would have felt a lot different this week. Of course, they still would have to play Georgia State and still have to win to make last week's game meaningful, or as meaningful as it might feel. But 0-1, 3-2, I'm thinking Georgia Southern really feels like they need a road win, and Georgia State just happens to be the team in front of them. So I feel like there's two teams that are in a good mental place to play a really good game on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree, and it's this game coming kind of at an unusual time. Seems like it's usually played later in the year.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, this is kind of at the front end of the conference schedule. So whoever loses this game is going to be – this conference is so difficult this year.
Yeah.
It's going to be – if you're 0-2, it's going to be difficult. Dig out of that hole.
Yeah, well, let's just – it makes for a nice transition. We've got a few minutes here. I think you've been paying attention to this Sun Belt Conference for a long time. They seem to be it seems to be positioned very well to boast that it's the premier Group of Five conference. And when they beat some Power Five teams all in the same day back I guess the second week of the season, I think it was, it just backs that up. But now they're kind of cannibalizing each other. They're going to be beating each other up. And if somebody stays above the fray, and right now, to my recollection, James Madison and Coastal Carolina are undefeated, both overall and in the conference. Unless you have a standout team, I think there's going to be a lot of close games. And I think it'll probably be a lot of teams that are, you know, 2-2, 3-3, and looking to make sure they get bowl eligible and stuff, 2-2 in the conference. I'm thinking that, we didn't know on paper exactly how good James Madison was going to be, other than you look at their whole history of the program and the culture there, and they're like, you know, a running start to jump into the fray of this conference. But anyway, the Sun Belt looks tough, and the East Division looks especially tough. I know the West wants to say, well, we're good too, and South Alabama's off to a good start, but I don't know how you argue with App State, Coastal Carolina, Georgia State, Georgia Southern, James Madison. I think Old Dominion is in there, and Marshall. I mean, over the course of time, it may even out, just like the SEC, depending on whether Alabama was up or down or Florida was up and down during back in the Steve Spurrier years. It may have been a little top heavy on the East or top heavy on the West in the SEC. People follow that very closely. I think the Sun Belt East, I don't think you can argue that it's not way too stacked for its own good right now.
Yeah, it really is very much stacked. And if someone argues that the Western Division is better. There'll be like five schools in the East saying, oh, we'll go play over there. We'll go play there.
Yeah.
Because it's just not the same.
Yeah, I believe, I don't have in front of me, but I believe the Georgia Southern schedule includes Louisiana from the West, which, you know, that's been a tough game for everybody the last few. I mean, they had a 15 game winning streak overall until it snapped a couple weeks back. But Louisiana is going through a big roster change, coaching change, but a lot of the same culture. I think the quarterback Levi Lewis was there about 100 years. And
Grayson McCall, Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, well, Grayson McCall is still a redshirt junior. If he comes back, because he bleeds teal or something to that effect, if he comes back for his senior year, I think people would have felt outside of Georgia Southern that they're really tired of seeing that guy's face. But
the whole COVID rules and the whole COVID eligibility, I still don't know who can come back. And
right,
you know, they got a guy at Georgia State in his eighth year. So
is that right?
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, and Todd Bradley Glenn, who was trying to come back from a dislocated elbow, he's a middle linebacker, inside linebacker, the Mike linebacker. He's in his seventh year because of a couple of medical red shirts and the COVID year, but they tell me he could come back for an eighth year if things add up the right way. Now, I don't know. He's already working on his second degree, and he could go to grad school too. I mean, there's reasons to stay in college, but I believe he's 25 now. And his first season was that Todd Bradley Glenn we're talking about. His first season, I believe, was 2016, which means that the guys that came in with him as true freshmen are not only gone from college, most likely, but they're probably on their second job, first marriage. They're probably settled down. Now, Todd's got his own business. He's got a lot going for him. He's got his own podcast, a lot going for him, making a lot of business decisions, but he's still a student and he's working on it. He's already earned one degree. But eighth year in college, that used to be something that the parents would be wringing their hands about. But a coach that has an eighth year player back, what position does he play?
Well, it's Aubrey Payne, who's a tight end at East Hart right now. So, we'll see. It's pretty rare.
Yeah. I don't know when you went to school, if there's any guys when you came in as a freshman, if there are any fifth or sixth year seniors in the dorm and you're like, who's the guy with the beard? Is that a teacher? Is that
no, we had a kid in the seventh grade who got held back so many times. He was the only kid in the seventh grade who had a driver's license, you know, so.
That's like, I think I covered a middle school, or when I was in middle school, I went to a track meet and one of the kids had a mustache and a beard. And I'm like, shouldn't that guy be in college or at least high school? But I always like to see if the kids play with their children on the same team, if that's possible. Yeah,
that would be fun.
Yeah, so kind of a LeBron James or Ken Griffey Jr. senior situation, certainly. We're going to take a break. I'm going to give Stan a chance to grab lunch here for a minute. But I'm going to promote we'll be back with Stan Autry from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, but I'm going to plug right now your best source for local news in Savannah, the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. You want to know the latest on Georgia Southern football like we're talking about right now? What about high school football? There's Hurricane Ian is come and gone and teams are back to a regular schedule this week. Who's hot, who's not in the Coastal Empire? Savannah State over at the Marsh. How are they doing? They're kind of off to an uneven start under new head coach Aaron Kelton. We have all that and more, including news features and opinion columns. If you aren't a subscriber, now's the time to try us out. You can get full access to our digital content. The latest special that I saw yesterday was $1 for 6 months. It's $1 for 6 months. That's practically giving it away. There's been other specials like $22 for 24 months or $1 a month for 6 months. Check out what the specials are and go to savannahnow.com/subscribe now and sign up. That's savannahnow.com/subscribe now and check us out. We appreciate you reading. And that gives you access to everything, not just sports. Okay, let's get back to Stan Autry, who covers Georgia State, golf, high schools, what have you, for this for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Stan, welcome back. I hope you had a nice lunch.
They're quite tasty.
Okay. Too many inside jokes for everyone right there. But Stan, I know you from covering golf and high schools and Georgia State. But you have a story. You actually covered Georgia Southern at the beginning, not as a beat, but as I guess because it was an event or a new thing on the sports landscape. What were the circumstances? And tell us about you and Irk Russell.
Well, that was well back in the day. I was just a young guy in the department, you know, and they didn't have anybody dedicated to cover Georgia Southern. Now, back then, the paper was huge, and we had people going all over to almost all the SEC games in the country, you know, big games in the country. We had someone there. We would not have a Georgia Southern person. So someone, one of the editors said, "You want to go?" I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll go." So the first game was against Central Florida, and they played at the old Gator Bowl. Mm. And it was September 11th, 1982, I think. Mm. And went down, and it was quite a show. They were doing some work at the Gator Bowl. I can remember them in the upper level. They were doing some welding on some of the stuff there, and I can remember seeing the sparks fly from the welders. And they had the press boxes were in plywood boxes, basically sitting on the field. So we were right at about 6 feet above field level, and it was quite a thing. I don't remember much about the game, but I do remember, because I was a young guy, I didn't go to University of Georgia, so I only knew Irk Russell just from what I saw on TV and the legend that he was. And just to look at the guys, he scared the fool out of me. I was very intimidated by the man, and I was kind of scared to go approach him after the game. Mm-hmm. But they said, "He's on the bus. You know, be glad to talk to you."
So he's already on the bus.
He's on there on the bus. So I got down there and introduced myself. And he offered me a box of chicken, one of the post-game chicken dinners. "Hey, you want some chicken?" Which I thought was very nice, and it kind of alleviated all my fears. And of course, he turns out to be just like the greatest guy in the world. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, got to cover three or four or five of their games that year, and didn't really become a beat writer, but made a lot of friends down there. And it was just a great experience.
You know, those early days I can hear about, you know, there it's the 40-year anniversary of, the modern era of Georgia Southern football. So you're a great person to talk to about when things are at those early stages. I'm going to say not only are they welcoming to all coverage from all levels of media, but that they're just more open to people being around. Right? There aren't as many people. Period. Everything's brand new. There's not as many media. Maybe the fans, especially on road games, haven't gotten the travel bug as much. Early on. So did you feel like that was, you don't know it in the moment, but that was kind of the salad days of covering college football?
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
Fried chicken days, as it were.
The fried chicken days. Yeah, it was a lot of fun and enjoyable back then. And I mean, just think about nowadays, if you tried to get Nick Saban, you're trying to walk on the team bus to talk to Nick Saban, how many guys are going to stop you there? You know?
Oh, I don't think you get near the bus.
No, I don't think so. So the access was great. And the sports information director at the time was a guy named Glenn Greenspan. And Glenn, you know, was a great guy, was a great help. And we've been friends for 40 years. He later became the personal public relations guy for Tiger Woods. Oh. So he was Tiger Woods' main guy until like 2 years ago.
Wow. Now, that's an interesting connection. Irk Russell and Georgia Southern to Tiger Woods in a billion-dollar empire there, I believe. So,
yeah, you can't get near Tiger Woods either.
No. This quick aside for those people that are not sports writers, bear with me. But I once covered a State of Maryland high school championship game. And it was at Byrd Stadium on the University of Maryland campus. And the head coach of this particular high school was a former University of Maryland coach. Just by chance, that's not the normal path. You don't normally go from Division I coach to back to high school, but he was in his more elderly stage of his career. I think he came out of retirement to coach the local high school team. And he, of course, he knew what he was doing. They won a state championship, and it's one of like four or five scheduled that day. So there's kind of a protocol of like 10 or 15 minutes for interviews, and then the next teams come on to warm up. You know, they're all using the same field. So time is short, and there's the trophy ceremony. And I'm making my way from the press box, you know, big press box down to the field. And I get down there and it's where's the coach? And they said, "Oh, he's already on the bus." I was like, there's no next game to get to. This This is it. This is the state championship game. This is when you should be celebrating, you would hope. And he's like, oh, he already got the guys on the bus. So I actually had to get on the bus like you did. Nobody offered me chicken, but I had to ask the coach and grab some players and pull them off the bus and talk to them, you know, at the door, those doors that fold open, to get on back to if I could pull them off the school bus to talk about the state championship game that just happened. So
that's crazy. Only in high school football, right?
Yeah. What's that?
Only in high school football.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, when there's a visiting team, and I said when a team is a road team, they have every reason to get out of there for any number of reasons. It's a Friday night, or in this case, it was Saturday, but a lot of reasons to get going after interviews or after maybe changing in the locker room or saying, you know, shaking hands at the 50 and waving goodbye to the cheerleaders and the people that made the road trip. But I've seen coaches leave right after the game. But that was a first, a state championship game. You have nowhere else to go. There's no next game not to comment about, you know, things to worry about. But let's get back to Georgia State. They pose, I think, a pretty good known quantity. Darren Granger now has established himself since last season as the starting quarterback. And Clay Helton, he was one of the people that called Georgia State the best 0-4 team, is what was hearing before the West Point game, the Army game. Darren Granger has established himself as a really good passer and capable runner, right? He's this is interesting. He's fourth in the country among FBS programs in passing yards per completion, 15.34 yards. Fourth in the country. That's tells me something, that when he does complete balls, he's picking the receivers that are going to get some good yardage. Maybe it's a mathematical situation, but it seems like it tells me that when he does complete passes, they're counting a little more. He's looking a little further downfield. He's not just checking off, unless there's a lot of yards after catch. He's not just checking off for what they call layups now.
Yeah, they made a concerted effort during the offseason to get him where he was more comfortable so he can throw the ball farther downfield. And so they've got three really good receivers who can go get it, have good speed, and he's taking advantage of those guys. A lot of times they work the short stuff, and he's gotten better at throwing the ball down. He's gotten a better touch, you know, better range. He just looks more comfortable back there.
Yeah, and just for comparison, and maybe if people like stats, and bear with me. So FBS programs is about 131. Kyle Van Treese of Georgia Southern, he's the six-year player, the transfer from the University of Buffalo, where he's a three-year starter. He's seventh in the country in passing yards, which is to his credit. It's counter to what Stan and I know is what Georgia Southern is traditionally about, which is run, 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 pass when you need to. That's a generality, but not too far off. So Kyle Van Treese has already attempted 234 passes in five games. So he's 142 of 234, seven interceptions, which you'd like back, 10 touchdowns, 1,574 yards. Okay, that's seventh in the country. Darren Granger, who you're just speaking about, who's fourth in passing passing completion yardage, he's 73rd or 78th in the country, 1,028 yards. Now, part of that is because they have a good rushing attack. And also, when you're losing games, you're not necessarily completing a lot of passes, maybe attempting a lot. But so Darren Granger, good yards, not great. Kyle Van Treese, a lot of yards, not getting as many explosive plays. And in terms of passing efficiency, which has its own mathematical formula, Darren Granger 59th with a 143.83 rating, and Kyle Van Treese 97th with a 125.31 rating. So basically that tells us Kyle throws the ball a lot. Darren Granger throws the ball enough, but also Georgia State has a good running attack, which I want to ask you about. These guys are pretty well also known quantities.
Yeah. In fact, I think if you had to ask, I think they're a run first team. Sure. They want to establish the run, and they built their team pretty much around behind that offensive line, which has been really good. And when they had a couple of guys go down, that's kind of what's caused them to stumble a little bit, you know, because they rely on the run so much, and their regular tackle's gone. And now what are we going to do?
Yeah, it was Tucker Gregg is like their I think he's second all time in rushing, first in passing, on pass, first in touchdowns, and things like that.
Yeah, and second in all time in rushing yards. And he's a guy who's just a battering ram. I mean, he just,
it's tough,
you know, but once he breaks through, he's got surprisingly good speed. I mean, at the end of the game last week against Army, he broke through the line just toward the end of the game. They were just basically trying to run the clock out, and he broke three, and suddenly he's 56 yards in the end zone. So,
Georgia
one of those State, things.
Or Georgia State, 19th in the country in rushing. I don't normally go stats heavy, but that's to back up Stan's point. 214 yards a game. Georgia Southern, which has had a nice balance of rushing attempts and passing attempts. I know that the stats may not always say that, but they're 41st in the country, 185 yards a game. They've actually outrushed their last two opponents in close games, beating Ball State, losing to Coastal Carolina. Rushing defense, and this is where Georgia State's adeptness at rushing, at being a good rushing team or a very good rushing team, could come into play. Rushing defense, not the pride of either team's defense right now. Georgia State, and a lot of it's depending on who you play. You play Army, they're going to run the ball. So Georgia State, 118th in the country, giving up 197.6, so almost 200 yards. Georgia Southern, which has been down at the bottom or near the bottom of the FBS basically all season, as much as five games means all season, 122nd now with 202 yards a game. The UAB game was particularly harmful to them in terms of giving up a lot of yards rushing. So knowing all that, Stan, these teams are familiar with each other, at least what they thought each other was after all these years. One of the questions that gets asked every time this week of the season, whenever they're playing Georgia State, is it a rivalry? I know that sounds maybe odd to people first hearing that. They're in the same conference, same division, same state. They played each other since 2014. Georgia State's program doesn't go back, you know, 100 years or 40 years. We heard the question asked again this week, is it a rivalry? And Georgia Southern's pat answer in the past has been, it's not a rivalry, it's just a team we play. Our rival's App State, or now I would say Coastal Carolina gets under people's skin, maybe like nobody else. Maybe you agree with me on that. They just have a knack for like sticking the needle in teams, especially after a win or during a win, gets people kind of, you know, riled up. So I would say App State is their historic rival going way back to the Southern Conference days and now the Sun Belt Conference days. But Georgia State is a rival. And now that Georgia State's won five of the eight matchups, including the last two, Georgia Southern, the new head coach Clay Helton, and the players, they say it's a rivalry. Of course it's a rivalry. What do they say over in Atlanta?
Well, they've been saying it's a rivalry the whole time.
Yeah.
In fact, last year when we were talking rivalry, Sean Elliott was saying, yeah, it's definitely a rivalry. You know, they're our in-state rival. And it's funny you mentioned what Clay said the other day. I asked him about that. Yeah. I asked him that question. He said, yeah, it's certainly a rival. We're the in-state. We're in the same conference. We recruit the same people.
Right.
Absolutely a rival. So I was glad to hear that admission, which hadn't been there in the past, because I think it'll add to a little bit more fervor to this thing.
Yeah, I think then I might write this. You may write this too. I think
working on it right now. Yeah.
Yeah. When after the game, the way the winning team celebrates, whoever that is, and the way the losing team feels, whoever that is, that should tell you, yeah, that was a rivalry game. That meant something extra. You know, that wasn't just a non-conference team or a team from the other part of the region that we play once every two or three years. This is an annual occurrence.
Well, I think if you look at what Georgia State did last year and the way they beat Southern last year and the way they hung on, it was such a great game at the finish. They were on the field and they were, you know, I think they were glad there wasn't two more plays left in that game because who knows what could have happened. I think that last year was their most emotional game, their most emotional win, maybe even more than beat Coastal Carolina like they did in Conway. They really enjoyed going down to Statesboro and winning at Paulson Field, which they should, because that doesn't happen that much.
Yeah, that's true. Georgia State also, I don't want to omit their defense, not just the rushing team. They have some good defensive backs over at Georgia State. Some they got some bona fide guys that intercept the ball over there.
Yeah, they played well. They're going to be really tested this week because they're going to see a lot of them coming their way. But A guy named Quay White is a four-year starter at cornerback. Wow. A guy named Antavius Lane is a safety. They call it the hit stick because he likes to lay the lumber. Both those guys are really, really good. And they've, in the past, been able to get pressure on the quarterback. So if they can do that, they'll have to do that this week if they want to be able to, you know, keep Van Treese in check and slow him down.
Yeah, I think we can kind of use our expertise, if you will, about now that we've seen the teams play five games. It's really real tough to judge the teams maybe 2 or 3 weeks in, looking for some consistencies. But I think it's safe to say Georgia Southern wants a balance of run and pass, but they use the pass almost like a running play with some of the quick screen passes and shorter things, and then hoping to get yards after catch. And they'll throw deep. They'll give their playmakers a chance to make plays. And that worked against Nebraska. That worked against Ball State somewhat. There were some plays against Coastal Carolina, but not enough. Didn't work at all against UAB for any number of reasons. They were dropping eight back. That was part of the reason. Didn't give a lot. There wasn't a lot of holes in that defense for Kyle Van Treese to capitalize on. And Georgia State could be very capable of a similar scheme to kind of shut down the middle range and deep stuff and make them work their way, move the sticks very deliberately, put together, 80-yard drive in 12 plays. That's not easy to do all the time.
No, it's not. I asked Sean Elliott the other day, I said, this is going to be such a different game for your defense than it was last week against Army, because they were just going to come and block and knock you off the tackle and then get yards. This is going to be more like a Coastal Carolina game. Van Treese is very similar to the kid at Coastal and his abilities, I think, McCall. Yeah. Sean said that Southern sits back there and it's like an NBA team. They pick you here, they throw it there, they decide where they're going to go, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a slam dunk, some guy driving a lane and slamming it home.
Yeah.
So he made an NBA comparison, which I never would have thought about, but it was pretty apt, I thought.
Yeah, it's got one-on-one positioning, post-up moves, that kind of thing. I like the concept of using every blade of grass, the whole field, and not being afraid to go horizontal or vertical. And basically make the defense cover you all over the field, not just 5 or 7 yards and beyond. We're almost out of time, Stan. You've been so gracious with your time. We have just almost a minute left. Is there another aspect of this game that jumps out at you? Anything that we need to say that hadn't been said so far?
No, I just hope the weather's supposed to be really good Saturday, and it would be nice to see 25 or 30,000 people come out to this game. Every time it seems like Georgia State has it set up to have a good crowd, a little rain or something horrible will happen. Well, that's not going to happen this week. So I hope all the Southern people and all the state people will come out and we'll see a huge crowd. I think it's going to be a great football game.
Okay. Yeah. And unless the Braves are playing or something, we'll see if the Braves are in the playoffs. Obviously, they won the division. We've got to go. Stan Autry. I always call you Stan Van Gundy or Jeff Van Gundy for that matter. Stan Autry. Thanks so much for your great contribution in this podcast. Hope you can make it next year. Everybody, thanks for listening to Georgia Southern Extra. We'll be back next week to talk about how it went with Georgia State and looking forward to the James Madison game. Thanks everybody for listening to Georgia Southern Extra. Catch you next time.
Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
To Wesley Fields. Touchdown. Georgia Southern.
Pass swings. On the way. It's gone! It is well with my stolen Montgomery! Georgia Southern wins!
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.